I'm Yaakov Katz, and welcome to the Jewish People Policy Institute's Inside Analysis of the State of Affairs in Israel and the Jewish World. Today's episode, we're looking at the recent report by the United Nations on sexual abuse of Israelis during the October 7th attacks. We'll look at why it took so long for the United Nations to issue this report, why some people in the world still deny its validity, and what will come next. To do this, I spoke with Orit Tsoutsiano, CEO of the Israel Association of Rape Crisis Centers, and then who actually met with the United Nations team and had published her own report on the sexual violence 2 weeks earlier. I then speak with two JPPI fellows who have written and spoken extensively on this issue, Professor Gil Troy and Dr. Alona Haggai Gray. Here we go. Orit Tsoutsiano, it's great to have you on the JPPI podcast. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
So the United Nations finally, after a long time, came out with the report that basically is finally recognizing to some extent the mass rapes and the sexual crimes that took place on October 7th, after October 7th, by Hamas during its attacks against Israel. You have done a lot of the work on this yourself at ARCCI and have been an outspoken and vocal proponent of making sure that these sexual crimes are getting the right attention by the world's institutions and the media and everywhere else. And you had a report that we'll talk about in a moment that came out just about a week or two ago. But first, give me your reactions to the UN report. What did you feel that it met your expectation?
I want to say yes. I have met with a team of Pramila Patton 3 times when they were in Israel, and I tried to help them as much as I could in according to our ethics. And I was happy to see, because it's actually the first time that any international body actually acknowledges what has happened. So this is important. Maybe it's they don't say exactly what we said in our report, but still it's very, very important to see that it was publicized. The team of Pramila Patton did really, they tried to do very good work. I was really impressed by their professionalism. And for me, I wasn't sure what kind of report they will be able to publicize, because it's very, very, very hard to collect evidence, and I can explain to you about this a little later. And the fact that they said that the rape took place in many, many scenes in the Nova and in the kibbutzim, and they found out what we found out also about the systematic mutilation of bodies and all the rest of the very graphic stuff that I do not want to talk about right now. It's too hard. I think it's very important. You know, we are battling for recognition. And this is what happens when we do our work in the rape crisis centers, because usually when a woman or a man are sexually abused, the people around them say, prove it didn't happen. How can you show that it happened? Because rape does not show on the body. You know, you can't see it. So I think it's very important, but there's still a lot of work to do.
The Israeli foreign minister I saw was a bit upset, decided to recall and summon back to Israel our ambassador to the United Nations, Gilad Erdan, and basically saying that it, you know, okay, nice that a report came out, but why is this not being brought to the Security Council? Why is not more being done with this report now? And it does seem almost like a double standard. So like, you know, the UN, it was just about a week ago that I saw a report come out from the UN that there are claims that Israel is sexually assaulting Palestinian women in Gaza. So Do you think that the UN is really looking at this in the most objective way?
First of all, I want to say that the UN is consisted of many bodies, you know, and it's there's a lot of politics in the UN, and I want to put it in my place. I am the head of an NGO that exists in Israel over 30 years, and what we do is fight for rights of victims of sexual violence. Now, the Pramila Patton, which is the high representative of the Secretary General of the UN on sexual violence in conflict, She is serious. She is dedicated. That's what my impression was. And her body did the work. But as I understand, and the UN is very political, and other bodies not necessarily acknowledge or not yet acknowledge what has happened, and we will have to wait and see. And I do not know how much power does her organ has in the big construction of the UN bodies. There's a lot of hypocrisy, not only in the UN, around the world, and this is very hard for us to digest.
You mentioned before the issue of collecting evidence, and I want to just spend a moment on that because there's been a lot of talk of what is there enough evidence? It was difficult to collect evidence. There were so many bodies, and it was under fire in the beginning of a war. What happened there in terms? Because we know that, for example, what do I mean? We know just from watching television, you know that. You have to be very scientific, very precise with collecting evidence after sexual crimes.
Okay, first of all, as the Association of Rape Crisis Centers in Israel, we're experts in victims of sexual violence. We're not the police and we're not the Secret Service. But what we did, and it's important to describe because, of course, I cannot give you no data and no numbers. And by the way, nobody can. But then what we did actually, because we have this expertise of analyzing sexual violence, we collected all the data that we found out is, first of all, public information. There were a lot, mainly in the international arena, not Israeli, all kinds of newspapers and TV channels that did really extensive work and serious work and serious investigations. And I helped all many of them when they were in Israel to collect information. And they did all of these different media channels, interviewed people, witnesses, first responders, and so forth. We also collected information from first responders, and we did by ourselves some interviews. And we also have information which is our information, which is not public information. This whole big picture of dozens of information shows that the sexual violence did not take place in one place in a specific time. What it shows that these things happened in all of the places, in all of the moshavim and kibbutzim, not all, but in several moshavim and kibbutzim, in the Nova Party, a few pieces of evidence about the army bases, not a lot. And also, as we all know, in captivity, we heard some information, and also in the Pramila Patten a report, there is information indicating about that. So from the big picture, when you look at it in a macro level, what you see that these things happened again and again, and not only happened, but happened in the same way, meaning without getting, as you said, into graphic details, it's too hard. But for example, a lot of naked bodies or half-naked bodies found all over these places. And one asks oneself, how come a woman is half naked in a party? And the answer is not that she took off her clothes in the middle of a party, because people usually do not do these kind of things, and it's many women. But the answer is somebody took off her body. It happened in many places. So that means, for example, that somebody gave the Hamas terrorist orders to do, because otherwise, why do they did it? Why did we find this kind of evidence in many places? Genital mutilation, which is very severe and very, I don't know what to say, how to describe it, very sadistic, barbarian. Yeah. It happened also in not in one place, in one kibbutz, but again and again and again, women were found and men shot in their genitals. So you ask yourself, if so many terrorists did that, that means, you have to be creative to think about doing these kind of things, because you can just shoot the person. Why should you mutilate the person? So when it happened in so many places, you understand that it's not something that could happen by accident. They got information, orders to come to Israel to kill, to take hostages, and before they kill, to mutilate, to rape, to do sadistic things. And this is one of the things I feel, also being myself a daughter of a mother who was in the Holocaust when she was a child. And we all know how all over the world we face Holocaust denial. I feel that this is a Holocaust, smaller in scale, but horrific, very horrific. And again, we as the Jewish people, we have to deal with this kind of denial, and I think it's horrible.
So I want to ask you before we wrap up, how do you explain what seems to be this double standard or the silence? You know, you mentioned the Holocaust denial. Now you see that, by the way. I mean, I looked at it, I say it a little differently. I'm the grandson of Holocaust survivors, but I say, I remember growing up in Chicago as a kid and hearing and having grandparents with tattooed numbers and hearing their stories from Auschwitz. And then knowing that there were people who were denied that it happened and saying, how's that possible? And I feel that since October 7th, we're living through how denial actually plays out, right? You see it happening before your eyes. But so obviously we have the bigger denial and there's the anti-Semitism, but on the sexual crimes, where you would expect the groups and women's organizations around the world to stand with Israel, to stand with, not, and you know, sorry, I take that back, not to stand with Israel, to stand with the victims, they're silent.
Exactly. If somebody in Israel or around the world thinks this is CNI, CSI, law and order, it's not that. It's not a crime scene when the police come and put some bands around and nobody enters and it's all sterile. No. You know, people who live in Israel totally understand that. Maybe not people around the world. Yeah, it's a war zone. The terrorists were still there hiding, shooting for several days. Now, first, 6:30 in the morning, a missile started and the terrorists came, entered Israel and started to penetrate houses in different places and gradually going to the party and starting to hunt young women. And when the first responders and the army came, what they saw, a lot of bodies, shot, dead. They were looking, first of all, for living people, to save people. So, you know, they found the two children that were hiding in a closet and people under the beds and they saved them. Now, the Israel is, of course, recognized and understand Zaka. Zaka are Orthodox people that volunteer in the Zaka organization, and their job is to collect all the bodies and flesh and blood from a terror scene and put them to burial. Now, Zaka people are not forensic collectors. They don't have any expertise in that. They know how to collect the remains of human beings. This is their mission. They do good, but they are not trained to do what is needed for such a thing. And we all know it never happened in Israel before. None of us, nobody in the army, I think, and no one thought that this is what happened. The information started gradually to unveil. So to think that we will have forensic evidence, no. To think that there are rape kits, of course, no. What we had, I call it screaming bodies, many dead bodies of human beings screaming because of the brutality they have encountered, but the bodies are talking, naked bodies, mutilated bodies, limbs missing, parts of bodies missing. And people are sensible, they see. Now, there is a difference, as we all know, and I know it very well from my job, between going to court and having everything very legal, you know, and then understanding that something happened and you cannot always prove it in court. And this is what now Israel encounters, what we usually, our survivors usually encounter, how to make people, the world, believe. And this is a very complicated problem.
And thankfully, we have people like you, Orit, who are doing the work to be able to speak out for these victims who unfortunately are not with us to be able to speak, many of them. So I want to thank you, Orit Luciano, the CEO of the Association for Rape Crisis Centers in Israel. Thank you for the interview and thank you for all your work. That was Orit Luciano, and who actually said to me, wait, there's someone at JPPI who I know who's also been involved and I've met at conferences talking about the sexual violence. And I said, yes, that would be Alona. So Alona, thank you for joining us this evening. And just to our listeners and viewers, Alona has also been at the forefront of really calling out and speaking out, and as an international law expert, really trying to draw attention to this. So Alona, I wanted to start with you maybe picking up where we left off with Orit,
What's next now that this UN report has been submitted, right? I know there's a lot of diplomatic issues here in Israel. We recalled our ambassador, as I mentioned, Gilad Erdan. Yisrael Katz, the foreign minister, is upset that Guterres, the secretary general, is not convening the Security Council right away. But what are the practical steps that we should expect that might happen next?
First of all, hello and good evening. And second of all, I really hope so it will be the beginning of a legal proceeding and further investigation against Hamas and against all the criminals that made these horrific things on October 7th. It starts with the UN organization, the Security General, and afterwards the other organs of the UN that can do a lot of things to investigate and then bring to justice all the criminals.
So, Gil, you know, you've also, obviously, you're watching this very carefully, and you wrote early on, even in the war, I remember a piece in Tablet magazine that was looking at where are the women's groups? Where you know, I'm thinking of Judith Butler, who this week made her comments. I'd love to kind of get your feeling of people like Judith Butler with this amazing just hypocrisy, but also the expectation from Israelis that we want justice, right? But I think we should be realistic and realize that might not happen.
It's such a painful topic. Even just listening to the language of hunting, and then going back to tattooing, and it brings us to so many levels of trauma and as Arit said so eloquently, so many levels of evil and layers of pain in Jewish history. And we've now returned to the worst moments in Jewish history and the worst moment in the worst looks at humanity. Let's go back to one of the fundamental facts, which is on October 7th, these perverts, these evil people filmed themselves, GoPro'd themselves. The first level of evidence didn't come from Zaka. It didn't come from the UN. It didn't come from Israel. It came from themselves because they were proud. And then at a certain point, when they saw that the conversation about them was changing, they started denying it. So I think it's really important that we start with that they are that they were actually the first witnesses against themselves. Number two is we're seeing a total inversion, because for the last 10, 15 years, and I say hats off to my feminist friends and colleagues, I've learned so much from them about the evils of silence in the face of evil, and that you cannot consent to sexual violence through silence, and you cannot justify it, and you cannot rationalize it. And the pain that a woman has gone through, and we know that that case was not just women, but also men, sometimes keeps them quiet for decades. And so we even have to listen to them when there's no more evidence. Going back 5, 7, 10, 12, 20 years, statute of limitations in the United States of America, and I believe in Israel, have been waived because of our need to be sensitive on the subject. And in real time, gender studies departments, leading feminists, feminist authors have betrayed themselves, not just the Jewish people, not just Israel, and not just these victimized women and men. They've betrayed their core identity. They've betrayed their lessons. And when I wrote that article in Tablet at the end of October, I've told this before, I was hoping to be upstaged. You know, usually as an author, you want to be the first. You want to, you know, make, you want to break the story. I really wanted a woman to stand up and call out the feminist organizations, to call out the sisterhood. And again, we have to point out there have been very eloquent feminist voices who have stood up. But even go back to November 30th, when the National Organization of Women finally decided to denounce gendered violence, they did it in the most generic of way without specifying Hamas, as if all of a sudden on November 30th, having eaten Thanksgiving turkey a couple of days before, they decided to denounce violence and rape as a weapon of war. We have to be very, very specific that this was indeed a systemic attack on Israeli women and on Israeli men, and it was done in the most evil of ways. And I don't need the UN to validate it, but I need the world to stand up and say this is unacceptable, even when it happens to a Jew.
So, Alona, why is that, though, right? Because the international law is meant to provide protections for people. Why is it that in this case, in your view, the world is silent. International law is not coming. And if any, the international law does anything, it's to take Israel to the ICJ at The Hague on trumped up charges of genocide.
Okay, I first want to say that I agree in every word that Giltrol said just now, but I want to correct one thing. The crimes is still continuing. There are women and men in captivity. And maybe the only thing that in this report that treating in very clear cut that they are still still under the threat of rape and other gender crimes. So we have to remember it 4 months later, that it still happened as we speak. And about the silence of the society and especially the women organization, I feel especially as a feminist woman that work with this organization, that wrote together articles and be together in conventions, betrayal. I can't find other word. Why it's happened? Because sometimes people cannot see a complicated picture. And it is very, very funny and ironic that Butler cannot see the complicated picture. Yes, Israel is the strong size in this battle, but still the picture is more complicated than that. And the binaric thinking about strong and weak is complicated. And then there is a very big ignorance in people that don't understand the conflict and don't understand what happened here all those years, and especially on October 7th. And I want to say another thing. I researched a little bit to understand more deeply about this mixture, and this is and I see that I found that in the 60s, when the organization of human rights that fought for the African Americans' rights in the U.S. They silence women that rape by African American men because they want to win the struggle of human rights. And it's the same here, I think, because they want rights for the Palestinian, they forget about the women, and there is a silence.
Interesting. Before I go back to Gil, I want to ask one last question. Pramila Patton, the woman who wrote this report, the UN envoy, what do we know about her? Right, because apparently her report was quite balanced from what I've read, what I've heard. I saw people asking her questions at a UN press conference, and that was delusional in of itself. You know, like you're giving Israel legitimacy to commit genocide. Your report is accepting the Israeli narrative. You don't have evidence. I mean, like, these are it's an embarrassment I felt as a journalist that these are the questions that journalists ask. But what do you know? What can you tell us about her?
I can say she is a very, very, very serious woman. She has a lot of experience. She is a very professional. She in this position from 2017, she did a lot of good thing and good work with women and women rights. And I wrote this report carefully. I read it, and she did a very, very good job, but still she was very cautious because, you know, there is not a lot of evidence, as we heard from Orit. So she was very cautious, but there is a lot of very, very important finding in this report. And I hope her name and her past and her profession will win in this battle between the reporters.
Yeah. Gil, I just want to wrap up with you, but Alona gave a bunch of reasons of why this happened, right? You know, the lack of ability to see nuance, the fact that Israel is the stronger side. But there's also an undercurrent of anti-Semitism here. And I think that, right, that also has to be said.
Before I get to the anti-Semitism, I could just pick up two other threads. One is just to reinforce what Ilona said about the civil rights movement. There's a very powerful book by Sarah Evans called Personal Politics. And it's basically about the 1964 statement by Stokely Carmichael, the leading Black activist, when there was a position paper about the role of women in the civil rights movement. And he said, and I'm sorry to quote this, it's grotesque, but he said, the only position for women in the civil rights movement is prone, meaning lying down and being in a sexual position. And she was one of the first to really talk about the way, indeed what Ilona said, because of the broader, let's call it conceptia, because of the broader conception that one had to advance the civil rights movement, in this case, advance Hamas, you therefore throw other people under the bus. And unfortunately, historically, it's often been women. So I want to emphasize that. The second thing is when we talk about evidence, one of the things that's happening is we're seeing the death of a thousand cuts because of the chaos. And this often happens in rape cases, but this is a mass crime scene. And so it's going to happen that much more because of the chaos. What do they do? And I just saw an article in The Intercept, which is a far left website doing that. Ah, we found an anomaly in one story of Kibbutz Be'eri, or one story of Nachal Oz. Therefore, and they zero in on that one, therefore the whole thing is inaccurate. And it's really important that we keep to the bigger truth, even while updating and finding the nuance and making sure it's correct. But indeed, we can smell the stench of anti-Semitism in this, because again, especially given what's gone on in the last 15 years, given the higher consciousness and the greater sensitivity to the violence that women have endured, and I appreciate your correction, Ilona, are enduring as we speak, minute by minute. And when they're not enduring it, they're enduring the trauma of what they just endured or the fear that it's happening again tomorrow. And let's just think of that cycle of hatred. And of course, we have to point out that we're also worried about some of these women already being impregnated by monsters. And every day that they're not home is harder and harder to have abortions and help them. So the trauma just continues. But it's not only about anti-Semitism, but we know when we study the Holocaust, when we study the pogroms, when we study thousands of years of Jewish hatred, part of the attack on Israel and on the Jews has always had a sexual dimension. You can go back to the Hebron attack in 1929, which was about maiming and sexually degrading the Jews. You can go back to the Kishinev pogroms. You can go back to so many instances of the Nazis. And the fact that Hamas on October 7th updated that shows how deep anti-Semitism runs in their culture. Because they did things that were not only unspeakable, but to me, unimaginable. And the fact that they went there, the fact that they did it, shows that in many ways, all too many of them have been raised on a culture of Jew hatred, of demonization, with a sick, perverse demonization of women, and of particularly Israeli women, in their independence, in their strength, in their beauty. And that is why, indeed, to go back to that ugly phrase, they hunted them down at the Nova Festival. That is indeed why they hunted them down in the kibbutzim. That is indeed why they actually undermined their own plan, which was to hold on to the kibbutzim and hold on to the cities and then move further up the coast, because they were so raised and so delighted in their Jew hatred, in their sadism, and in their and their hatred of women. And the fact that so many colleagues of mine, so many progressives, so many leading feminists cannot see the intertwining of these evils says nothing about us. It has nothing to do with the accused. It has to do with the accuser.
It has to do with
those who are silent, and we have to call them out.
Thank you for joining us today. You can find all our episodes where you get your podcasts. Please share widely and give us a 5-star review. We will see you back here soon.